and call to order the meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission for City of Berkeley Lake for September 14th. We're going to 7:30 a.m.
P.M.
P.M. I stand corrected. Thank you. It's been a long day.
Yes, it has. That's it.
For our agenda, you see a call for a review of the minutes.
The commission will accept the minutes.
I make a motion to approve as presented.
The minutes, it's been moved, and I will take as a second your comment that the minutes should be approved. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion passes. Vote of 3-0. Just for the minutes we're noting, we have 3 present today. And due to illness, I believe, at least in case we are absent 2 of our members. I ask for the approval of or changes to the agenda as you see.
Make a motion we approve the agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Thank you very much. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. Hearing no opposition, the motion passes. Thank you. Let's move into new business. We have 2 items, starting with a review of the bylaws related to membership, quorum, and voting. And just to context this, this item calls for us to consider now some options for future planning zoning commission activity that will allow us more efficiently move actions forward in the event of attendance variations over time. And just so you know, that one of the difficulties we ran into for the last meeting is that the actions that we took did not carry official status because of the lack of a quorum, which is part of our bylaws and size of the committee. Lee, would you tell us what your investigation showed on this matter and give us an opportunity to discuss some options?
Well, what I did was just try to think about the way that we could change things. And I looked at some other cities and other bylaws to get some examples of different possibilities. And I gave you 3 choices. There may be more, but those are the 3 that I came up with. And one is to increase the membership of the board, similar to councils. It would still just take 3 affirmative votes, pass 4 or something. But that's one solution. Another is to look at appointing alternates to serve. Probably no fewer than 2 people should be chosen. And that would be new for the city. I have worked in cities that used alternates before. The commission met fairly infrequently, just as you all knew. It was a zoning board of appeals, and I found that function is much more often found in a zoning board of appeals than a plan. Planning commission does without my experience. So it's one thing if you can sort of technically look on what the variance rules are, and that's what they're going to be looking at, variance of appeals, versus people who are going to be concerned policy changes and the recommendations of council on such things. The other case, which I don't particularly endorse, but I saw it in another set of bylaws that had a similar composition to ours, is just that we don't change anything about the composition. We just amend the bylaws to say, if you don't get a unanimous vote of 3-0, the business fails. It stops. Now, I think that there will be plenty of people that would be they're frustrated about us choosing to go that direction if they just happened on the variance on a meeting and they were just briefed. So they would feel like that they couldn't, you know, do anything about it simply for a year. So I don't necessarily recommend going that route, although it would clarify the problem to those at the same time.
So tonight, Ronnie's allowed to vote.
Ronnie can vote to ensure a quorum, which is for the to break the tie.
So to ensure a quorum, mm-hmm. But if we had an issue tonight, Tom and I can make it 2-0, and it's
no.
We have no effect.
All right,
well, a majority vote is required. A majority of the commission.
A majority of the commission.
A majority of the full commission.
But let me say this, if I understand this correctly, even though you just said it, let me repeat it. Rodney votes for tonight to ensure a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't take any official vote because there's only two of us.
He will be a voting member, and his vote will count.
Okay.
Okay, so that's if there are three of us.
That's three. But if you have a vote, you have to be a vote.
Right.
It would not
have. Right.
So let's say it was a 2-1 It's all
exact. That's exactly. So it's five of us. If we're voting yay or nay, it's sort of hard to. I mean, we end up with, even if we end up with a tie, then
mm-hmm.
Running is to vote, and it's
mm-hmm.
3-2.
Mm-hmm.
If there are four of us, which was what brought this up, and it was 3, it was 2-1.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Can we not keep the same membership and somehow grant him voting privileges in that county case? I mean, he has voting privileges if there are three of us. Can he not have voting privileges if there are four?
That's fine. It's a simple situation.
I mean, I was just wondering if... I mean, because then if there are four and we get 2-2, it doesn't pass. And then he only votes if... I mean, if it's 3-1, then something passes.
Right. If it's 3-1, something passes.
Right. So, I mean, would that not be a little easier in terms of... I think alternates would also be difficult for the reason that who on earth wants to be an alternate when they got to learn all this stuff and then they never get to do anything.
Right.
And then trying to get them here at the last minute because somebody's not going to be here.
Well, he didn't train them today because it's a unique challenge.
Yeah. Let me say, I think this memo that you put out is on the subject is a very good explanation.
I agree.
And I think I'm hearing you say the same thing I'm feeling, and that is of the three options that are in this memo, I think option number two is definitely not the way to go.
That's the alternate?
That's the alternate.
You feel the same?
I agree.
Oh, I'm losing.
I was going to argue in favor of the alternate, but I can be persuaded, but we are an unusual city in the sense that we sort of blend the quasi-judicial piece with zoning actions and votes along with the planning piece
right.
In one group. And I do think for the planning piece, the alternates are less desirable unless they've really been coming to meetings and attending and, you know, you put some strings on so they can be up to speed in the event that action has to be taking place. But
well, I might be oversimplifying it.
Over time, I felt like alternate positions would be a good use of the skill and experience of past planning and zoning members, should there be any in the future, so that you wouldn't, and so that it'd be possible to continue to recruit new members, but then not worry about a lessening and functioning of the new commission when the alternates. Being an alternate would be a great, maybe, possibility for someone who's otherwise provided good service. Startup, that argument doesn't work very well, but that was my thinking at the time.
I think what Lee said is, if I heard you correctly, mm-hmm. and that is, I think training would be a bear, and we'd have to make sure we. This is a long word, I'm going to use it anyway. We'd have to make sure we drug at least one alternate to every meeting. And this is probably oversimplifying it, but you don't have alternate city councilmen. Now, I know that we're not, you know, you don't have alternate city councilmen, so the hats we wear.
Yeah. It would not be symmetrical.
I just don't think alternate's the way to go. Okay. I think we should look at one and three of the options that she could.
Well, and Jeff is introducing
an alternate. Yeah, I was coming up with number four.
I like your number four.
Which would leave the structure of the committee the same. I mean, Rodney, the chairman, whoever it is, gets to vote if there are three of us. Could we set it up so that if there are four of us, he gets to vote? Because then he either it's a 2-2 or a 3-1 or maybe he only votes
that's
if it's 2-1.
The problem is, if there are just four of you here, I need to call.
What happens?
One of the functions of city council.
This is probably a question for the attorney.
Tiebreaker piece.
Yeah. This is probably a question for the attorney. But if there is a tie, can then it not be tabled to the next meeting?
And I'm sure that we can write the bylaws that way.
What I was trying to get across to the last meeting. Actually, also is that we just give the chairman, in this case Rodney, we give him voting rights. Is what I hear him say.
My concern about
but what happens in the tie?
Customer service and the way that is perceived in the community. These people are sweating bullets over this stuff investing money and planning things. They've got weddings coming up, retirement, there's always some elaborate, story that goes with each request.
I tell you one thing I've learned over the years is that there is a certain value in having a chair as non-voting. You can sort of, in between meetings, represent to our customers, the people that, I'm just saying things, but it's really the commission.
So
it allows me to move a little more freely with the public. I like the symmetry idea in the option one.
Right. Well, I was going to say that I would sort of lean towards option one.
Let
me just add another minute.
I see the other points of view on the alternate. This was something that came up in the training, and somebody got me convinced. Who looked at our system and recognized that, everything was good, but you guys don't have an alternate. What happens, just business grind to a halt.
Does that person understand that you all did function legislatively as well as public insurance?
He did.
Okay.
He did. We were very clear about that.
Because I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. But be that as it may, what about option one?
I would like option one with, but I think just six members.
I don't know why the attorney and I haven't. I didn't want to spend a lot of the city's resources getting into a deep dialogue until I sort of had feedback from you all. It's kind of about five people, seven, is so important since our council seems to function pretty well with six. And so I just need to push him on that a little bit and ask him. I'll see him on Thursday. But I didn't see the reason why we couldn't just.
Six or a quorum of three.
Now, when you say six, you're including the chair.
It'll be a quorum of four.
Six, including the chair.
That includes the chair.
Did I say quorum of three on there?
No, it says a quorum being four.
Yeah. Yeah, six for the chairman. Quorum of four.
I'll go with option one and add one person for a total of six, including the chair.
Okay, so we got two people out tonight. So if we have six and two out, we would still have four people.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember in council situations, I'm trying to think about whether or not that has ever happened. And it may be the way council does it is that they have a form or they don't include the mayor in how they calculate their form, because I know that they've never had tie votes. You know what I mean? They've never voted on things that have come to a tie. Never been four people voting. So it must be, therefore, exclusive of someone's taking it. And that's probably why there's, I think, recommended seven with a quorum of four or six, and they have to go with four or five.
Even with the six, with the six members, four or five, how does that feel?
Well, they have two people now. You don't have four. Will we be in less position than we are in?
Yeah.
In front of you.
It leaves some better shape.
So do you have Rodney?
Well, if you had six people, right, if you had Rodney and three others, you would still have.
Rodney wouldn't have to vote.
At all.
If he wouldn't vote, unless, and there wouldn't be a tie.
There wouldn't be.
There could not possibly, be a tie.
That's all. So it's free, but if that's the case, it still leaves us in the same position that we're now, which is the 2-1 split, then only the other doesn't have to.
Right, it doesn't help us.
This is we don't have to act tonight or anything. This is just to get on the table where we're all coming from. And of course, we're disadvantaged because we don't know what the others feel. But historically, it has been not an easy thing to get people to be on the commission for whatever reason. That may change, I don't know. So we always got to be concerned with making sure that if we expand, we can do it and we don't end up with.
My perception is, I think now is the time, because I think you're going to have a lot more interest than in the past, if nothing else, because there's a lot of people upset about what's going on still with the dam and stuff like that. So there's a lot of citizens that did not give a flip about the city, so to speak, in the past, and what's all going on now, you have a lot more people that are getting concerned. So, so now's probably a good time to be having people. I'm sure you could find some folks.
I'm not sure that finding alternates would be much easier.
Yeah, I think it'd be harder. I've been an alternate for handbells, let me tell you, it's no fun.
I mean,
he's already had six, and two people were out, and four was the quorum. But if that counts the chair, we could still end up with a non-voting chair, and we get a 2-1.
Back to your suggestion at the beginning, can we just make
Rodney voting eligible? That's for undersigned.
Voting eligible if it would.
Right.
If it would make the decision, that would be. If it would make the decision. Because then if he votes for, it passes. If he votes against, it fails, and it's 2-2. So, we could,
So in the tie, you would just rewrite the, and it's true.
Instead of just saying at a tie, you could say in case of a non-decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of gets to the third decision. If it doesn't get three votes, it doesn't pass.
Right.
It's kind of like that happens.
Yeah, that happens.
No, that's all. It's not like it's catastrophic. You know, that's just public work that sometimes things don't make it for various reasons. Sometimes not the substance of the issue. So,
well, if that happens, we could make history. We could be the first entire B&Z board to be recalled.
It would not hurt our feelings.
Right. And where it really counts is where you get, citizens feeling like, boy, gosh, we were promised your action for something on the quasi-judicial end. And,
are you promised a final decision when you come before this committee?
No. You're promised a fair due process, the process that you are due based on the bylaws in the city charter, and that process is suggested by the announcement of our meeting calendar.
Okay, let's take tonight's meeting for example. When the meeting was set, everybody was going to be here. Somebody could have put a variance in, and Lee could have said, be here at 7:30. And then this morning, we find out that two of our members, because of illness and travel, could not be here, which is nothing against them. So the citizens would show up tonight and we'd be in the same situation tonight. We'd have to look at them and say, sorry, you got to come back.
Yeah.
So you're not really guaranteed. You're guaranteed due process, but you're not really guaranteed a final answer. And you're guaranteed due process if there's a quorum.
Actually, if we do it this way, finally we choose to amend the take, any business item failing to receive 3 votes in favor should be considered denied. And, you know, I mean, they could either, if they thought it was fixing to go 2-1 and be denied, they could maybe withdraw.
Yeah.
Well, which also brings up something, which also brings up a point I was thinking about this evening, and that is, does this, in effect, if you take the last item, where if it doesn't get 3 votes, it's denied, then does this, in effect, give the chair the ability to determine when the vote is going to be taken? In other words, you have a quorum, we can listen tonight, but after debating an issue on John Doe's screened-in porch, and we discuss it, and it gets very obvious that there's going to be a tie, then at that point, the chair says, you know what, I think we need to table this till next meeting. In the interest of fairness to the people. That way,
you can so that way, you saying that would be a good thing. You were saying that would be a good thing.
Well, you know, it might be.
You thought it was not hitting it at all.
Yeah.
They didn't see it that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
It delays it.
Yeah.
And I accept your argument, what you said earlier about weddings and stuff like that, and sure, people
sort of votes.
But that's probably the easiest, is that if it doesn't get 3 votes, it doesn't pass.
Mm-hmm. It's not the immediate problem.
It does.
And then the chair plays parliamentary procedure juggle game and says, let's table this till the next meeting. Mm-hmm. And that way you wouldn't be in that position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just.
Does anybody know Robert's rules? Can he do that without
Robert's
a motion to table it?
Robert's did.
Robert's did.
No.
Atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom wanted to do one thing, and Sally and I wanted to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sally and I might could, you know, first and second and pass it. But let's say Tom wants to delay it, hoping to get, you know, and then he motions and then we don't. I mean, nobody seconds it, and the motion's denied. It just, I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit, but it just, I don't know.
Excuse me, that's.
If two people, I mean, you can't even, if you don't get a second, you can't even move forward with a motion.
Right,
the motion will fail for lack of a second. Right.
Which means we'd have to vote.
Well, then the issue would be, is somebody going to make a substitute motion?
Right.
And if nobody makes a substitute motion, then it's enough. It's still there.
I was going to say, it's still there, so it might be inconvenient, but the citizens can come back at the next meeting.
It's like a pocket table.
Right.
Right. I mean, I do think, though, that there would have to be a motion to
put something.
But I don't, you know what I'm saying?
So you're doing some sort of active thing on the record to
right.
On the other hand, if you have a 2-1 thing and the other two forwarded a motion, you wouldn't get 3 people to vote for it.
Right. It would
die anyway.
Yeah,
it's not. Yeah. Thing just in thinking about this, I mean, you know, I sort of came into this with the assumption that, oh, we have to do something. I mean, but I don't know that now, listening. It's sort of, we have sort of existed for a long time now with this potential limitation in our structure. It hasn't come up that often.
But it has come up last meeting.
It did.
I mean, it did come up last meeting.
It did.
That was something that City Council asked us to work on, and it was not technically something we had to even... Right. We were fortunate that it was something that needed a legal opinion, a legal vote.
Yeah.
But if it were something like a citizen, I'm afraid they might raise it with something. I don't know. I think there must be a solution to this problem.
And
we can't do this fixing...
Well, like you said, if we do stick and have a forum, what would you say, three?
No, if we had six or five, you had six or seven before, so we still could get a vote of 3-0 without Rodney voting, but then we might get a 2-1.
Right.
Which is what we did last time. I mean, four people. I mean, I think the only solution is...
My intent was to have four people voting and Rodney, which means that the four of them would be five. I mean, if he would have to be in four people. That's how council works. They have to be three in favor, and then if we want to vote for the midterm number, they have to be out.
So council works are six, four, and five, and three to pass.
It's really what it is there's six of them. The mayor functions like Robert does, but when they talk quorum, they take the mayor out of the
kitchen,
of the group, and it's quorum of four council members. Okay? But the mayor, and I've never been to a meeting for the mayor. Either the mayor was there and there were four council members, or it was the mayor pro tem and the rest of the council. So there were always five people there. So I've had to come up.
So that arrangement sort of is very restrictive on the mayor's range.
Stop right there. From that last example you gave, mayor's not there, so you have four and
the mayor pro tem.
When the mayor pro tem is acting in place of the mayor, then that mayor pro tem doesn't vote.
Unless there's a tie.
Unless there's a tie. So you're back to the same thing, two and two. Well,
in that case, that's five people. Four council members and a mayor pro tem. Mm-hmm. In that case, two votes get decided by the mayor.
But can we change the definition of passing to a majority of the quorum instead of a majority of the commission? Because that way, if it were tied, if we had four people and it tied, Rodney votes. If it's two against one, it passes.
That's something.
Assuming you have the quorum of three.
Okay. Assuming you have a quorum of three.
I don't see why not, and I actually think
that might solve all our problems.
With how the commission functions at
I was wondering about that, because I mean, we didn't have bylaws before I got on this commission.
But at some point, it came up, and it became clear to me that was not really how things were done, because if only two of the commission can vote and pass something, that is sort of contrary to how people feel. You know what I'm saying? And I forget if the attorney was the person that was like, unfortunately do it that way, or not, but I do actually think that's how we had two of those, I'm pretty sure, before, and the same thing.
So refresh me, how does this...
So what I was suggesting is if we wouldn't have to change the structure of the commission, we just change the definition of passing to the majority of the present.
Voting in presence.
If Tom and I voted against each other tonight, you would cast the deciding vote. Mm-hmm. Or if we voted 2-0,
and assuming we have at least three members voting present, then things move forward.
Right. You could have our current quorum, and then it's either 2-1 or 3-0.
Yeah. That seems like that's a possibility.
We'll see. Say yes. I agree.
And not
shall we refer it back to the attorney for clarification?
Yeah.
So no action, but we'll ask an opinion on this as one. It seems like a way through this that isn't so earth-shattering that it creates all kinds of other problems which are hard to come up with.
I think it solved a solution for a resident who was on the time constraint and had already met all of those requirements to meet with us.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't think it requires special action to what we do to get attorney advice. Shall we move the agenda?
Sure.
I'm all in favor.
Hey, I'm liking that.
Good. All right. We need to discuss the non-conforming expansions issue. We took care of it last time, but we sort of raised a lot of issues about anomalies in our code and so forth that eventually we're going to have to be straightened out. This requires only discussion, no action. Lee, go ahead and give us your take on it.
One of the things that I pointed out last month was that there was one place in our code that said you can't expand. was an increase in non-conformity. The trouble coming was an increase in non-conformity. And then another part of our code, we require a variance to expand the non-conformity zone. So the question is, would expanding the non-conforming structure be an increase in non-conformity? Thank you for that. The way, yes, the goal is to limit people or the something, you know, throwing that impact neighbors and, you know, that sort of thing. Or does increasing the non-conformity mean actually can be closed to the site or whatever property line you're out of whack with now? Where I've worked before, that building has also had that experience. So we could keep the same line of the building, but not to be closer. Okay, so it just allows somebody to do what we saw last month, which is, yeah, as long as you don't make your setback any less conforming than it already is, we'll let you out. After you all review it, of course.
Right.
Yeah. What I found in the research...
So they would still have to apply for a variance?
Yes.
But that would allow them to apply. I mean, it's one of the qualifications to apply for a variance.
Right. They would be basically... What I think is important for us, we added verbiage 3 or 4 years ago, but set out this whole different process for variances for non-conforming expansion. And we did that because a lot of times you can't prove what a hardship with the other criteria. But I think we sort of threw ourselves in when we did that. Because we said we have to do it. When I interviewed some other city planners and looked at other codes, by the way, what you get from a planner and what you read in the code often or not. I have a hard time coming to the same conclusion and interpretation. It does seem that the general consensus to require variance, even if the expansion is performed, okay, which is what we've been doing. But many of those other jurisdictions will also consider, they haven't ruled out the option for somebody to come in and get a variance if it doesn't still conform. Okay?
If the expansion doesn't conform.
If the expansion makes it less, even more non-conform.
Well, that's the question.
That is the piece that caused us to get into this bind. We were really concerned about, over time, doing everything we could to get outliers back into line with the new code. I mean, this primarily affects the old city, by the way, and not so much with the subdivision. And so we somehow got into this thing for saying, okay, if you're going to do something with a non-conforming structure, you've got to go through a process. And, you know, I think the general practice and custom has been that as long as it didn't make matters worse, you weren't going to have a hard time.
And the question sort of for me is what are the criteria that we use to determine if it makes matters worse, other than it doesn't meet the code? So it's sort of like, is it just a rubber stamp? Yes, you're meeting the code, so yes, you're doing the rule. You know, and it's money and time and all that good stuff for the people. But other cities are doing it that way. They're going through an administrative variance process to do anything to a non-conforming structure, it seems. Except for that, which is Lynette's use, and they don't have to do that. But, I think the loose language leaves the door open. It just says, you can't expand a non-conforming structure without variance. It doesn't say that your expansion has to conform to the code. It's not addressed. So that there is a general language. And I understand that that's uncomfortable because that would be then up to, I mean, you all would have to sort of make a call as to whether or not, you know, you felt like it was an okay thing for the community. I mean, I thought last month's case, though, illustrated that there are times when mean, you know, you get the next door neighbor in here saying, absolutely, I don't care if these people will do this, and it's not going to make anything worse, and the property law, I mean, you know.
Well, let me ask you this question, because I'm a little confused after I read this amendment and stuff. Did we get flack after our decision?
No. We just talked about this at the time. I was instructed to
No, it's more of a philosophical and technical issue. Do you want to stick with the concept for the old city primarily,
right,
that at some point in the future we envision a city where all properties in that part of the city conform to existing code, and that you use the sort of the code and the plant contingency processes in such a way as to get, as to like seize upon every chance that may come along because of remodeling and restructuring, whatever, to give a message that, you know, we sort of, we prefer that properties get in line here, but we realize in every case that's just not doable. And this happened to be one case where it seemed a fair decision was not to go in that direction, I guess you could say. So do you want to have them, so that's why the, it's an awkward thing, I think, because what you can't see in the way the code is written is this idea of why the code is the way it is. And it's as I as remember, it is that we were going to, really from a planning point of view, insist on the principle that the old city properties get into code, even though we know, you know, you've got properties now, some of them butt up on the curve and they should try. I mean, that's, you know. Is that ever going to change one day? Well, I don't know.
100 years.
Yeah. But it felt good to at least stand on the plan that was agreed upon at that time. And so you have a code which says, okay, we'll at least get to raise the question if that property that's on the curve comes in for some modification, where we can say, well, listen, maybe we can do a little bargaining with you. If you want, if you're going to do a wholesale renovation of this thing, and it's a big piece of construction, can you, you know, we'll go along with one thing you want to do if you push it back a little bit or something like that. This gives us the opportunity to do that.
And that's kind of what I got talking to Robert. You know, if they
want to
do that, they have to correct something else.
Right. So it was a...
So we're not talking about it. So if they wanted to, say, expand in the back of the house, that is still going to be, all of their expansions are going to be within code. Right. I mean, I guess I was a little confused as to...
I think it's unfortunate when you have a variance process that's pretty much full on completing the variance process. That means that you don't need a variance process.
Right.
You know. And that, I feel like that's what happens when you're going to expand a non-conforming structure, and everything about your expansion complies with code.
Can we make that a...
Well, we had talked about that. I mean, that was one of my thoughts.
I don't think we should do away with requiring variance, but at the same time, I don't want to make it more restrictive than it is, because I don't want our, when I say our, this commission and future commissions to have their hands tied. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at the last two actions that came in front of this committee, one being the property on the dam, which was a variance because of non-conforming and everything else. It didn't affect anybody. Mm-hmm. It made their quality of life better, improved their home, it probably improved the city.
Yeah.
And the only person it really affected was the dam, and the dam is not a real person.
Right.
But if you look at it from one standpoint, maybe we shouldn't approve it because it didn't meet, it was non-conforming.
Right.
And then the last issue, and I put that in my motion, is when the people that are on either side of them, who are most affected, are begging us, basically, to approve it, then it's not going to affect somebody sitting over here on Baywood, or Bay Court, or whatever the street is. So my point is, you do it on a case-by-case basis. And just because the code is written as it is now does not say, in my mind, that we can't turn it down.
It doesn't. What it did say, though, was that what we did last month, if somebody was paying very close attention, they could have said, how could this variance have been approved under Section 38, or 78 through 67, which is what the administrative variance, or the criteria, or the criteria for granting a variance for non-conforming structure or layout. The first criteria is that the expansion must meet the zoning ordinance. And the way that I dealt with that was saying there's conflict in that, in the section of the code that addresses non-conforming expansion. There are a couple of things that are just missing from our code that I think we'll see. We need to address non-conforming structure. It gets confusing when you start talking about uses, and I think by and large, and this is me as a planner, not as only a legislator talking, the thing that you worry more about is incompatible uses. Setbacks, there are reasons for setbacks,
right. But
setbacks are also, can be a real obstacle to good planning. Having everybody sit 65 feet off the road, all those dimensional requirements are not necessarily the best way to plan something. They're just a standard that somebody picked, for whatever reason. But a lot of places are sort of turning away from that and saying, we want to build too long. We don't want all the land eaten up in setbacks. You've got these huge lots, the waste of space. I mean, there are some issues with doing that. You can argue both sides, the whole setback issue. So I think that the non-conforming use piece makes sense. If you've got a non-conforming use, you want to get that dealt with as soon as you can. You don't want it expanded. If they need to grow, sorry. You got to move. You can't grow your non-conforming use right here. If you just continue, you got to get out. That makes sense. The non-conforming structure part is something that I think we need to specifically address in the code, the definition, and a section that deals with non-conforming structure expansion. I also think, and this is sort of the way the three of the codes are written, they sort of set apart single-family residential dwellings from all other non-conforming structures. Mm-hmm. However, when I called them, it seemed to me, when I read them, it looks to me like if you have a house, you can do whatever you want, based on this language. There was nothing about any kind of variance, any restriction on doing whatever you want with your house. But they do have a variance process in this case. But I think most people are worried about commercial. Not me. Our city is so different because we are always focusing on the residential piece of things. And other codes are looking, when I call people, they start talking about signs and group homes and all these other, these much bigger sort of planning issues than what we're really facing. And their codes have to address all of those situations. So I do think that we can at least flesh out some of the language to get some more specificity and clarified. But I do think we need to decide, do we want to continue to don't ever allow what happened last month to happen again? Or do we think what happened last month is something that should be allowed to happen?
I think it should.
I think what happened last month should be allowed to happen. Mm-hmm.
Well, that gives me the direction to at least do it.
And what would cost? Since this is not a vote, I'll just tell you, Dan loved it. because whatever its limitations, and I appreciate what you're saying, Lee, it does allow us to use some discretion, to deliberate, and to look at an individual property owner's circumstances and juxtapose that against the plan and the vision that we have for the city, and to come out with a fair decision. What I would worry about, though, is if there's this conflict that you're talking to,
is there a technical way around a conflict that is easy and simple and not, it still preserves our ability to review these kinds of changes?
I think we do something simple and similar to a loser.
That's sort of it, yeah.
You're claiming you're not a loser, yeah. No matter what you're doing.
Yeah, right. And there's a sort of a message in there that you have a non-conforming structure. When you do that, and you know someday you want to do some remodeling and stuff like that, you're going to, it's going to be a little more costly for you dealing with the city. But your eyes are wide open when you buy a property right. of that sort, and that's fair, right?
It is.
And what I heard, at least in Robin, there's a certain amount of setback distances that they can approve it. Mr. Lankhart's 10%.
Yeah, yeah.
So I gave them some scenarios to give me feedback on, and they were like, you know, if the setback were within the administrative approval range, and I'm talking about this because so it's already non-conforming, you're adding on, you're still that same degree of non-conforming. If that degree is within whatever percentage, they still do it administratively.
Okay.
But in our case, you know, I think probably we would look to the full board to hear any kind of non-conforming expansion where you are actually putting additional non-conforming area onto the structure, like they did.
Right.
And that way you don't...
Okay, but if you are a non-conforming structure and putting on a conforming addition...
I think that people, that's not a change for people. So if they're angry about it now, it's been like that for however long, since before I got here. And I don't think that there's any problem. I have, you know, told people that, and I don't know. There's a difference in cost. It's $50 for an administrative variance, it's $250 for a full board. So there is some, you know, they can see a tangible benefit.
And
the chances of approval are obviously, but if you know, the word administrative means kind of sound like a rubber stamp.
But somebody's checking in, they're not just allowing you to just,
right.
Exactly. So, I mean, I just think that's fair. And I think we have responsibility to be, you know, faithful to the law, but also fair. And I think that seems reasonable to me.
Well, what I'm
trying
to do is about language that you all wrote on.
That sounds good. All right. Any more discussion on this?
I don't think so, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So, are no citizens present this meeting, so we'll
make a motion to adjourn.
Second. Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.